This is the Should Have Bet More podcast, presented by Goal Boys Network. Here's your host, Will Hill.
Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast, presented by Goal Boys. Coming up on the show, Femi Abemefe of BetQL will join us. We'll go over week three of the NFL, get his thoughts on all the games he likes, the college games, one final look maybe at the baseball awards because he is the awards guru, so see if he likes anything in the football awards. And football is where we will start. I know we are down to the final week or so in baseball. I'll maybe get to that briefly here. There's not much to talk about except the wild card races, but it's a football Friday here. And before I get to my picks, the Jets, as I'm recording this, are burying the Patriots. And this is a game. I know it's the Patriots. I know it's a game you expect to win. This is a good sign for the Jets. You take care of business. You're going to be 2-1 after three games. You should have been 2-1 after three games, but look, they looked rusty that Monday night against the 49ers. The game against the Titans could have easily gone the other way, and they would have been looking at 0-2 and looking at a crisis. That wasn't the case, and now they're in a position where Rodgers looked great throwing the ball, a little over the top with the announcers just gushing over him nonstop during the game, but Rodgers looked great. The defense kind of picked on a soft opponent in the Patriots who couldn't protect Brissett. So the Jets, look, they're not perfect. They got to get some of these injured defensive players back. They got to probably figure out a way to get Reddick. The pass rush is still probably against the better teams. Flawed. The run defense wasn't great the first two games, but this is a very welcome sign, and the Jets are right where they need to be. Okay, you gotta pencil them in for the Super Bowl or the AFC Championship game now, as of yet, but they get 9 or 10 days off, and they don't have to play a road game, a true road game, until October 20th. And we're sitting here, it's Thursday, September 19th, Friday, September 20th. They got a month until they play a true road game. Like I said, they get 9 or 10 days off, a home game against the Broncos, a neutral game. I think this is an overseas game. It is October 6th, 9:30 a.m. against the Vikings. It's Germany or London, a neutral game there. Home against the Bills. That's a night game. That is a Monday night game. And then finally at the Steelers, October 20th. And after that, at the Patriots again. So the Jets have a chance here to bank some wins. If you just go through the schedule and you give them a win against the Broncos, put them at 3-1, you'll say they split the Vikings and Bills, just to be fair, 3-2. I mean, you would take 3-2 probably heading into the Steeler game, Patriot game. Again, the Jets are going to pile up some wins here. So as long as they're healthy, the defense starts to get better. Miami, who knows what happens with Tua down the line. When you look at their schedule going ahead, that's two games there. The Jags, the Seahawks, the Colts, they've got some winnable games here. Jets are still, on track to be a contender, quasi contender, win their 10 plus games and, be in the mix. And that's all you can really ask for if you're the Jets. People say Super Bowl or bust. That's not the case. If they made the playoffs and, won a game and then lost to whatever, the Chiefs or the Ravens or the Bengals or somebody in the divisional round, you'd be disappointed. But after how bad you've been and how irrelevant you've been for so long, you'd certainly live with it. So baby steps, but the Jets 2-1, it's got to feel good. Starting to look like the team you'd hope it looked like. Again, not perfect, but they took care of business, and this was by far their most impressive performances. It looks like they're going to not only win, but cover as about time one of these 6-point favorites, not only just wins the game, but not only just covers the game, but actually just winning the game has been an issue. As we saw all those upsets with big favorites last week, the Lions, the Cowboys, the Eagles, and the Ravens. And we finally get a big favorite to cover the spread. So good night for the Jets. Get some time off, and they are on track to be a playoff team. And then we'll take it from there. But a good night for them. Picks for this week. I will start here. I will go Titans -2.5 against the Packers. I don't buy this idea that Love is going to play. They get the Vikings next week. The Packers do. You'd probably rather just save him for a division game. And Willis, look, he got the job done last week against the Colts, but the Colts weren't ready. The Colts somehow were the only ones on the planet who didn't know that the Packers were just basically going to run every snap and run the wing T. The Titans will be ready. The Titans have played really good defense. Now they're 0-2 straight up. They're 0-2 against the spread, which are both miracles because they should have beaten the Bears, and they could have easily beaten the Jets. I mean, they're much more likely to be 2-0 than 0-2 when you look at just like the stats and the play-by-play, but that's what happens when you have a bad quarterback and you give games away. They've gotten, punch blocked, unsportsmanlike conduct, roughing the passer to swing games. But Titans are good on defense. I think a road game for Willis, and I do think it'll be Willis, will be a different story. And if you put this kid behind where he's got to throw the ball and he's just down, 7-10 points, that's going to be a disaster because Willis cannot throw the ball. They were able to mask his flaws last week. I don't think they'll be able to mask him this week. Give me the Titans -2.5. I don't have a lot of sides I like this week. I really don't. I will go with a total, and I've been talking about it the first 2 weeks. I'll go back to it. To me, the Steelers are an under team until further notice. They just want to run the ball, play good defense, punt when necessary, kick field goals when necessary. And you got two old school coaches, two conservative coaches, Harbaugh, Tomlin, you know, two hard-nosed guys who are going to run the ball, play field position. So to me, same thing as last week, where if somebody can get to like 17 points and not turn the ball over, they probably feel like they have a good chance to win. So I think this is a field possession game, and I will take under 36 Steelers, Chargers, both teams with a chance here to go 3-0. And if you look at the scores from the two teams, I mean, like they're both 2-0, but the Steelers won 18-10. They won 13-6. And then the Chargers' two wins are 26-3 and 22-10. So these teams are not even cracking, you know, 30-plus points. I mean, these are very low-scoring teams, very low-scoring games. I would expect that to continue. And the Chargers don't have, you know, the weapons. It's Herbert. It's an improved offensive line, an improved defense, and a decent running game here with Dobbins, but not a lot of explosiveness at receiver really for either team. So Titans minus 2.5, Steelers, Chargers under 36. And I'll throw another under in. That'd be boring. But again, I don't like a lot of the sides. I'm not going to give out picks just to give them. I know people like, you know, picks against the spread more than they do over unders, but I will go under. It's mostly 43.5, 49ers, Rams. I just think, look at all of the guys. Look at all of the skill. I talked about this the other day, the skill players that are missing, Debo Samuel and McCaffrey for the 49ers. And now Kittle might not play with a bad hamstring. And then the 49ers, and then the Rams, a bunch of offensive line issues, Puka Nacua, Cooper Kupp. You know, I think San Francisco looks at the game last week where Purdy turned it over and threw a couple picks and said, all right, we're banged up, they're banged up. If we can just run the ball and play pretty good defense, we could probably get out of here with a win. Let's not throw the ball more than we have to. We don't have a lot besides Ayuk, you know, in terms of the weapons, but they are certainly diminished. I'm sure they'll give Mason a bunch of touches. These games in the division are usually lower scoring too. So I'll go under 43.5 Rams and 49ers. College, not a lot I like. Tennessee, Oklahoma is an interesting game where Oklahoma was a 7-point favorite over the summer in the look-ahead line. That's swung the other way entirely, where Tennessee's a 7-point favorite. I think Tennessee's good for it. I mean, Tennessee's an absolute juggernaut. I don't like laying 7 points on the road, but there is nothing in this matchup that suggests Oklahoma can hang with a team as dominant as Tennessee. So that's a fun game to watch. Lean towards Tennessee, nothing besides that. And the other one that's big, Michigan, USC. I just don't think Michigan can throw the ball, so I would actually look towards laying the USC minus the 5.5, maybe a Michigan team total under, because Michigan just has no passing game. And, you know, say what you want about Lincoln Riley, but he is going to scheme up offense. He's going to figure out a way, the USC coach, to put points on the board. And boy, if Michigan, it's like what I said with Willis, with the Packers, if Michigan falls behind 7-0, 10-0, I mean, their whole offense is just handing the ball over. They're making a quarterback switch to this kid, Alex Orji. We'll see if he can do anything. If he couldn't beat out the other kid, I can't imagine how bad this kid is. And I just think it's going to be a long season for Michigan. And if you look at the schedule, if they lose this game, that's two losses. They still have Oregon. They still have Ohio State. That's probably four. Even some of these other teams like Michigan State and Indiana and Illinois are improved. Not impossible Michigan loses, you know, 5, 6, 7 games. This is not a great Michigan team. And, you know, long-term, I wonder how long that coach is there for. So not a great college week. We've got some better college weeks coming up. That I think it's the October 12th where there's just loaded games. Oregon, Ohio State, Bama, Tennessee. There's a Georgia-Bama game coming pretty soon. So we've got some monster head-to-head matchups coming up soon. This is not one of the, you know, the better weeks. And this is kind of the first week for a lot of these teams where, you know, you're not playing out of conference teams anymore. It's almost like the preseason for college where a lot of these teams have played nothing but, you know, lower level teams, and now they get their first test. So it makes it hard to evaluate. So fun Friday night game though, Illinois, Nebraska. You know, Nebraska is laying 8. They look to be a good team. I think that's a lot of points, but nothing I'm dying to bet here in college. But those were the NFL picks, and I do like USC over Michigan in college. Before we get to Femi, quickly on the baseball, Yankees extended their lead to 5 games over Seattle. Heading into Thursday, but the Yankees lost, the Orioles won. So it's 4 with 9 to play. Barring a sweep, barring a miracle collapse here from the Yankees, the Yankees are going to win the division. The Orioles have played terribly here for a while now. They got a nice win. They got a comeback walk-off homer. I'm not sure if it was a comeback, but they did get a walk-off homer, the Orioles did, on Thursday. So maybe that spark plugs them, and they hit a run here where they can win 4 or 5 in a row and at least make the Yankees sweat. And they play 3 times head-to-head, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday in Yankee Stadium. But again, anything other than a sweep. And the Orioles do have the tiebreaker, so if they tie, they win the division. There's no more game 163. There's no more one-game playoffs. It's better head-to-head record if there's a tie, and that favors the Orioles as of now. But again, barring a sweep, the Yankees are going to win this division 4 with 9 to play, up 5 with 10 to play. I mean, that's all-time historic stuff if you pull that division. So it looks like the Yankees here in good shape to win the division. Got a little bit of a scare with Soto running into the wall on Thursday. Seems to be okay, stayed in the game. So that would be just a nightmare, in terms of the enjoyment of these playoffs. You want to see Soto and Judge versus the rest of the league. I'm looking forward to these playoffs. So hopefully the Yankees can go in whole. I do think Soto's okay. And the wild card race, the Tigers have come out of absolute nowhere. They were 8 games under 500. They got August 10th, and they are now tied for a playoff spot heading into this weekend. They play Baltimore. That's a fun series. And Mets and Braves, the battle for the final spot. That is going to be fun. Mets play the Phillies this weekend. Then they play in Atlanta. So fun baseball ahead. It's the final week. So not as many pennant races like in terms of the divisions. A lot of these divisions, like I've been talking about all summer, we talked about the AL East was close, and that gap has widened. A lot of these divisions just have been settled for a while. A little mini run here or there, but for the most part, we've known for a while who's going to win these divisions. But the wild card's still up for grabs and still meaningful play, pennant race baseball down the stretch here leading into the playoffs, which should be a lot of fun. And speaking of a lot of fun, Femi Abebefe, our next guest, you better you bet, BetQL. He is next. This is the Should Have Bet More podcast. All right, we are back. Should Have Bet More podcast. You can catch him at BetQL. You better you bet. It is Femi Abebefe. Femi, long time, no chat. Congrats on the new job. Thanks for coming on, man. How are you?
Really appreciate it. Yeah, and last time we talked, I was at VEASAN working there, but a lot has happened since then. Yes. Football season's back, and we're off and running, but it's, as you know, you work in the content space. Like, football season is like grind season, so I've been pretty busy transitioning with the new job and everything, but it's been really awesome. Like, I really do appreciate the folks. BetQL has been really, really great. You know, we announced our fall lineup. I'm really confident in what we have going on, and working with Nick Costos, doing You Better You Bet, a show that I was a fan of starting out before I was even in betting content. And then I got into betting content where I got to be sort of a fan from afar. And now working with him Monday through Friday has been really, really a great treat for me and a really nice thing to do. So it's been really cool. Football season's been treating me well as well. So yeah, we're off and running. Just like, can we get this baseball season done so I don't have to keep looking at box scores? Honestly, it's kind of where I'm at here. But it's a good time of year, though. A lot to bet on, a lot to talk about.
Yep, and we will obviously get to football here, but you are the awards guru, and last time you were on, you gave out some good baseball futures. Hunter Green, I think it was like 150-1 at the time. He got as low as like 15-20-1, and I don't know that he would have won, but man, that was a hell of a bet.
Could have been interesting. It's funny, he's like still up there in like all the baseball reference wars. I'm just like, I know. If he could have just pitched, I mean, like, he literally threw up all over himself a couple times on the mound, but yeah, unfortunately the elbow gave out and he wasn't able to keep it rolling.
And again, we'll get to football, but as of now, I guess the MVPs are spoken for. Pretty much everything is spoken for, unless you think Lindor has a chance to surpass Ohtani with this back injury. It doesn't seem like it's possible. Even if he wasn't hurt, probably wasn't possible. It's really the rookie of the year. The AL rookie of the year market's been all over the place. The NL market has been all over the place. Where do you stand on both of these awards right now?
Yeah, the NL one, I know there's been some chatter about like Jackson Chourio and like how good he's been, and it's been outstanding what Chourio has been doing, but I think it's a little bit like too little too late from him. It feels like we kind of like, he almost feels like a third party candidate a little bit in this award race. It's Merrill or Skeens. Are you team position player? Are you team legendary, or at least potentially legendary pitcher in Paul Skeens? My guess is that the voters lean towards the position player just because the Skeens outings have been so irrelevant. Like, you know, like, he's obviously still appointment viewing. He's an awesome pitcher. I love to watch him pitch, but the Pirates have been out of it for about a month plus now. And Merrill's playing in pivotal games, important games in the National League wild card race. I do think the voters are going to lean towards Jackson Merrill. I'm not saying to run out there and bet it, because they could always just pivot back to Skeens because he's been great. But I think that Merrill would go ahead and win the award in the American League Rookie of the Year. I feel like I go back on this thing back and forth, like within the hours, not even just within the days, within the hours. At one point, I'll think it might be Luis Gil. Another point, I think it's Austin Wells. Maybe Colton Cowser does something to make me think that it could be him. It's just such a crapshoot because all of these guys suck, to be quite honest. Like none of them are good, which is made for a fun betting market because there's no runaway or anything like that. And nobody has really kind of taken this award. And like, I know you follow baseball content. I try to get a hold of whatever I can read or whatever I can watch. Nobody's talking about this award because the players are not very good. So I think that we're kind of flying in the dark here with this, which can be fun as bettors. Like, when things are very certain, like Judge winning AL MVP, like, that's not fun to bet into. Nobody wants to lay minus 5,000. But when it's three guys, and probably should be a fourth, but it's only three, like when it's either Heel, Cowser, or Wells, I think it could be a fun betting market the final 11, 10 days of the season. So I'm really, really just watching every at-bat for Wells, watching every at-bat for Couser, and watching the final couple starts for Luis Gil and see how this thing goes. But my guess, I don't even know if I can honestly guess. Like, it depends on how Gil pitches on Sunday against the Oakland Athletics, and also if Wells is able to hit or if Couser is able to hit. But I think whoever has, like, the final, I guess, a strong final 7 days, I think is actually going to win this award. I think it's very much in doubt right now as we sit here about, 9 days away from the regular season being done.
Yeah, and to your point, these candidates are so weak that Luis Gil has a five-inning, one-run performance, a bunch of base runners, and all of a sudden that catapults him even higher. Last week, same thing, five innings, one run. Oh, you got to bump up his odds. And NL is down to Merrill minus 210, Skeens plus 160. I did think the other day, Skeens were over 3-1. I thought that was too high. I thought, hey, this is a jump ball. I would actually lean towards Skeens. I know the bias against pitchers, but he's just been so box office, the famous girlfriend starting the All-Star game, that I don't know if we had to start today, and who knows, we're sitting here trying to handicap the voters. I thought it'd be, 51-49 Skeens. So we will, we'll find out soon enough. I think sometime around the Sweet 16 in March Madness is when they actually announce these awards. It's just so ridiculous.
It's crazy.
You've been good, obviously, picking off these numbers. Before we get to like the games and the teams themselves in the NFL, any NFL awards, numbers, markets that you think are off?
Nothing that really jumps out right now, because like the season is so long. Like, we're here sitting ahead of week three. All the best stuff that came up last year was like around December, whether it was Will Anderson or Kevin Stefanski or Joe Flacco. Like the season is so long that like there's like 3 to 4 different turns in terms of the narratives and where people start talking. Like 4 weeks in the NFL feels like a lot of time, but it's not when you actually take like the 10,000 foot view and look at the entire season. So I would tell people that, yeah, the markets are moving, but I would try to just pump the brakes. Don't succumb to FOMO and feel like you got to chase numbers and like, oh, this person's getting bet out, I got to grab this before this 8-1 turns into like plus 250. Like, it's relax. I mean, Jalen Carter at one point last year was like minus 2,000. And then he ended up losing the award. Like, these things happen in the NFL season because it's such a week-to-week league. And in 1 week, the entire market can get flipped. So I would just tell people to just kind of just evaluate, take things in, see how the teams are performing, see how players are performing, and then go from there. But there's nothing really that jumps out to me. I guess if anything, I mean, I've been beating the Vikings drum for so long, like O'Connell coach of the year would maybe be the one thing that jumps out to me. But even then, like, let's see what happens with the Chargers and the Steelers. Like, one of them is going to become 3-0 after this week. I think that coach is probably going to get a big bump in the market to where maybe you don't have to run out and bet Kevin O'Connell. So I would tell people to kind of just wait a little bit and just kind of see how the dust settles over the next like 2-4 weeks or so. And then we'll kind of reassess at that point.
Yeah, I wonder, and I had the same thought process with O'Connell. It was a good call on the Vikings, at least so far. People will hold the fact that Flores is such a big part of that. Like, is that help his case? Or is that like, all right, it's not really O'Connell, a lot of it's Flores. I don't know. It's interesting to,
But I think like if you can make the playoffs with Sam Darnold, that to me almost feels like a checkmate in terms of like talking about coach of the year. It's like, this dude's been a journeyman like bum his entire career, like high draft pick, bust with the Jets, bust with the Panthers. Niners never wanted to let him play because Purdy was obviously better. Like if you can make the playoffs with that guy, I think that's a really, really big feather in the cap for O'Connell. Now, there could be other cases. Maybe the Chargers win 11 games and Jim Harbaugh just sucks up all the energy because he's a big personality and they go ahead and vote for him. But I think if the Vikings make the playoffs at 10, maybe 11 wins, O'Connell's going to have as great a case as anybody.
Anyone you think you were wrong about, any teams you think you're wrong about where, hey, if I was talking to you 2 weeks ago, you'd want a mulligan on a certain team, a certain take?
God, good question. Team that I was wrong about. I would say.
You want mine? I'll give you mine.
Give me yours and then I'll try to come up with one.
I was pounding my fist that this is finally the year Tomlin doesn't get it done. His quarterbacks stink. Russell Wilson's eventually going to get benched. I actually think that was such a blessing in disguise because Fields is a nice compliment where he can just run a little bit. He can shorten the game. They can rely on their defense. They can score their 16, 18, whatever points. And hey, I mean, long way to go, but 2 road wins is a hell of a start. So Pittsburgh, I would certainly like a mulligan. And if you bet under 8.5, it's weird in the market. They have those adjusted season win totals. like I said, 2-0, both road wins. One of them was a coin toss game. The other was a sizable dog. The over-under is still 8.5, which is very, very strange. So Pittsburgh is one I'd like a mulligan on.
Yeah, I mean, the market's always going to hate Pittsburgh based on the brand of football that they play. And a lot of people bet those under 8.5. And that was one thing that I said during the offseason. I was like, you know what? I don't know how they're going to do it, but I'm not betting under. Like, I didn't bet the over just because it's like you look at the team on a piece of paper. It's like their quarterback's either going to be Russell Wilson or Justin Fields. I'm not betting over 8.5 in 2024. But I also was not betting the under just because Tomlin, by hook or crook, somehow comes up with these wins out of you know where. And it just he does it every single season. I will give you this. The team that I think I was wrong about, and I was really high on them going into the season as a potential like juggernaut offensive team. And who knows how it had played out if Tua stayed healthy, but Miami. And even before Tua got injured, they just looked like just tissue paper soft against Buffalo. Didn't really have an impressive performance against Jacksonville. It could still be just kind of September is the preseason. Maybe they would have turned into something, but now that seems like it's very, very unlikely. Who knows if we even see Tua play the rest of the season? I know he's on the IR. They're saying that they don't want to put a timeline on that. Obviously a very sensitive subject with his concussions and the past that he's had with concussions. So I would say Miami in the early going, at least. Like, I don't want to always just kind of go too far because it's only been 2 weeks, but Miami early on for me, even when Tua was healthy, I was not impressed with what I saw with the Dolphins. I thought they could win the AFC East and maybe be a contending team in the AFC.
I'll leave this sort of open-ended. What's real and what's not from these surprising / disappointing teams, the Minnesota, New Orleans, Tampa, I'll throw the Chargers, the Seahawks in there, and then the flip side of the coin, the Ravens, the Bengals. Who else would we count as disappointing? I guess we'll just leave it at those two teams.
Those are probably the two more disappointing teams.
Yeah, what's real, what's not?
I would say what's real with New Orleans is the fact that they have a really, really good offensive coordinator. And this is a team that we talked about this before the season started on You Better You Bet. And I kind of broke down some of the historical criteria that I look at for teams that could win the Super Bowl. And one of them is success rate over on the RBDSM website or whatever, the one that Ben Baldwin runs that has like EPA and success rate and all those things. The 21 of the last 22 Super Bowl winners in the season prior were top 10 in either offensive or defensive success rate. And New Orleans, year in, year out, they're always like in the top 5, top 7. Because Dennis Allen, while he's not a really good head coach, is a really good defensive coach. That defense is always sound and they play really well. They're not like super reliant on turnovers like my favorite team, like the Cowboys and other defenses out there that are more so opportunistic and not necessarily sound. And with the Saints, I looked at them. I was like, this team, like, I can't picture them winning the Super Bowl. And even after the 2 weeks, it sounds crazy to me as well. But with Clint Kubiak being the new OC, it's like if they ever got that offense right, this team could be really good. And it sounds like they really did get this offense correct with Clint Kubiak and what he's able to do to make Derek Carr's job easier. Kamara seems like he has had a resurgence. Looks like 2018 Alvin Kamara. And then they have really good receivers in Olave and Shaheed, to where I don't think the Saints are a team that I'm going to want in the playoffs, like to where I'm betting NFC, betting to win the Super Bowl. But in the regular season, why can't the Saints be the one seed in the NFC? Like, why can't they win their division going away? The schedule is not that difficult. And this was a team that last year had a win total. I want to say it was 9.5. They won 9 games last year and nobody liked them. They're much better than what they were last year. Like, they could win 12, 13 games, maybe even 14 games. Like, I think that the Saints are real just because they're now pairing an offense with has always been a really sound defense. In terms of what could be fake, in that same division, Tampa, I don't buy it. And maybe I just have a blind spot to the Buccaneers. But they had no business winning that game against Detroit. I mean, it knocked me out of Survivor.
Me too.
I'm absolutely disgusted by it. Like, Detroit doubled them up in yardage, 7 red zone trips, and somehow scored 16 points and lost the game. Like, that to me, like, I get it. Tip the cap for Tampa. They did what they had to do to win the game. But I think that was more so Detroit lost the game than they won it. And then the other team they beat were the Commanders. And the Commanders are terrible. So I don't really get it with Tampa, at least to this point. Like, I'm not really being like, hey, let's go out there. Todd Bowles, Baker Mayfield. They won the division. They don't get respect. I'm still not giving them respect. They're going to have to beat a much better opponent to me to actually give them respect and not just be the beneficiary of a team kind of stepping on the rake the entire game like the Detroit Lions did. So I'm not really buying them. From the AFC North side of it, I would be more willing to buy Cincinnati than Baltimore because I think Cincinnati's issues can be corrected, and they do this every year. With my old co-host on the GM Shuffle podcast, Michael Lombardi, we said after last season, we're making a rule. We cannot judge the Bengals until Halloween. Like, that's the rule. Like, I don't care what they look like, how good, how bad, not judging them until Halloween, because I don't know what they do in the month of August, but it's clearly not practicing football. Maybe they're doing sing-alongs and kumbaya or whatever at training camp, but they start the year slow every single year. But then once we get to November, December, you start to see a team that looks like a potential Super Bowl winner. So I think the Bengals can still correct this thing, to whereas Baltimore at 0-2, God, that offensive line is such a problem. And I do have questions about Zach Orr, the defensive coordinator. So I bet the win total under on the Ravens before the season started. I felt that this is the team that's going to go like 10-7 at best. And that's what it's kind of looking like for me. Maybe it's even 9-8 for Baltimore, despite having a really good head coach and a really good quarterback in Harbaugh and Lamar. So Ravens, I'm not really as sold on them getting things corrected. I think the Bengals problems appear a little bit more fake. They're much better than the 0-2 record suggests.
Yep, I pretty much agree with that. And that's a fascinating early game here with Dallas and Baltimore this week. It's Baltimore, hey, 0-3. I mean, you can talk about seven teams make the playoffs and nobody's running and going to run and hide in the AFC North, and you got your division games. But, man, 0-3 is still a hole.
It's a big hole, man.
Yeah, it really is. And the one team I forgot to mention, I think they're and they're not on this level of contender, but the Rams being 0-2, I mean, I just think this might be one of these seasons where it gets off track and it never gets back on track, which is funny. At Sunday night, I mean, they're very close. They're up three with the ball, a first down, and they beat Detroit, and they're 1-0, and they're feeling great. And you blink, and they're 0-2, about to be 0-3 probably against San Francisco, and they got a million guys hurt.
Yeah, the Rams, that's that one hits close to home, because I love the Rams this year. Like, I bet them to win the NFC at a pretty big number. Like, I bet them that the Chiefs over Rams in the Super Bowl, like a Super Bowl exacta that paid out like 82-1 or something like that. Like, I really like this team because I mentioned that success rate stat. They actually were in the top 10 in both offensive and defensive success rate last year. And these new defensive, like these young defensive linemen that they got, Young and Turner last year, now Jared Verse, who's the defensive rookie of the year favorite through 2 weeks, which doesn't really mean much, but like, he's played really well so far. It appears that they hit that draft pick, and that offense, when healthy, I think has the potential to be the best offense in the league, like at least a top three offense, but they're not healthy. Nakua's hurt. Cup's hurt. Jonah Jackson on IR. Havenstein's been banged up. They're going to get Alaric Jackson back from suspension. But like, when they're getting guys back, they're losing other guys. Like, it's just been kind of the season from hell from the Los Angeles Rams. And it's unfortunate because I really do think that they could have been a contending team and really given the 49ers all they could handle to win that NFC West. Like, that was another bet that I had, like plus 350 to win the West, that it's pretty much down the drain given all the injuries that they've suffered despite McVay and Stafford. And I'm trusting them as much as any head coach quarterback combo that we have in the NFC, but they just can't overcome all these injuries. It's just really unfortunate.
Who do you like for week three?
Week three, the card is ugly, man. Yeah. It is really ugly. Like, I got some bad teams on this one. I'll start with one that's readily available right now. I'm almost disgusted saying this out loud. I kind of like the Giants getting all those points. Oh. Like, I took seven. Even at 6.5, I would take it as well, just because Deshaun Watson is not good enough to be laying that many points against any team. Like, I don't, like, as bad as the Giants are, he is not good enough of a quarterback. And I know the Browns, their offensive line, it should be a little bit healthier on Sunday than it was against Jacksonville and against Dallas. But still, like, I think that's a problematic matchup for them, even if coming off of the injuries where they haven't played much. And here comes Brian Burns and Dexter Lawrence and Kayvon Thibodeau. If the Giants can get pressure on Watson, I think that could be a game where it gets a little bit dicey for Cleveland. So I like the New York Giants plus the 6.5 was the current number there. The total, maybe that's the better route, is just betting it under, because I don't know if either team's going to score much. But I could see this being kind of one of those ugly games. And if Daniel Jones, God bless his heart, as long as he doesn't fumble when he gets sacked by Myles Garrett, I think that the Giants should stay within this number, 6.5. So give me New York as one of my favorite bets, which sounds disgusting to say out loud, but I'm fading Deshaun Watson whenever he's laying a big price like this, just because I think he's a bottom three quarterback in the NFL.
Yeah, as I moan and discuss, I mean, I have to agree. And I've been saying this, it's just a very hard point, a very hard league to lay points in. I mean, you just see,
yeah.
I mean, you sit here from 1 o'clock to 11 o'clock, Eastern time, watching all these games, and I don't want to say it's stupid to bet on, because it's fun to bet on.
It's fun.
It's fun. And I do think there's just so much randomness, the flags, the late hits, the whatever, turnovers. There is so much variance, and there's just, it's hard to cover these numbers. And we saw that the dogs do really well last week. Doesn't mean that's going to continue, but yeah, I'm with you. And just in terms of, hey, it's really hard for me to think otherwise in terms of like dog or passing these games.
You know, another one that I haven't bet yet, but I'm definitely eyeing, is that this Green Bay Tennessee game. I think regardless, whatever happens, whether Love plays or not, like, I think that'd be pretty preposterous that he's going to play. Like, the fact that they're 1-1 and not 0-2, I think they'll give it another week for him, despite him being on the practice field earlier this week. But if it's Malik Willis again, and we get something under a field goal, I think it's a bet on the Titans. Last week, in my estimation, was all about the Colts and not having a run defense. Every person on planet Earth knew that the only way the Packers were going to move the football in that game was if they just ran the ball. And for some reason, Gus Bradley, doing God knows what on the sideline, just did not realize that, to where he's just letting them run the ball for 50 times for like 200 plus yards. Josh Jacobs has a career day. The week before, Joe Mixon had a career day. Like, that run defense is atrocious. That's not the case for Tennessee. Tennessee can actually stop the run, and they're going to ask Malik Willis to throw the football. We've all seen how that goes. The guy's barely thrown over 100 yards in all of his starts. Like, I don't think the Green Bay Packers are going to have a very good outing in that game. So anything under a field goal would be the Titans for me. And if Love does play, I would love it even more. And I'd bet the Tennessee at maybe like a +3 or +3.5 or something like that, because there's no way he's going to be 100% if he's out there on the field. Now, always in the NFL, look to back these, or at least look to fade these quarterbacks that are coming back from injuries that are going to leave them a little bit compromised on the field. So I think if Love plays, it's still the Titans. If he doesn't play, anything under a field goal, it's Tennessee.
Yeah, starting to hear whispers that week 4 against Minnesota for Love, which makes sense. Division game. Give him the extra week. Beating the Titans isn't a big deal in terms of like tiebreakers or anything like that. So, and health is the most important thing. What last one before you get out of here? College, whether it's Heisman, anything this week, any big takeaway so far from the college season, anything you're betting this weekend?
You know, nothing in the Heisman really for me. I mean, I think this is a week where a lot of the guys that I think can win are on bye week, like Dylan Gabriel, Jalen Milroe. Other guys can win, like Nico Iemelaleva. He can win as well, but I'm not as in love with Tennessee. It's funny, we talked about this on the show this week. Garrett Nussmeier at LSU, he's at a massive price, like 60-1. I know they lost to USC, but that defense is just like bad enough to where he's going to be forced to put up massive numbers. And they also get a lot of their big games at home. They get Alabama at home. They get Ole Miss at home. If he could at least split those, or hell, if he wins both of those, I think that he could be in that conversation for winning the Heisman Trophy. It sounds a little bit outlandish because they lost to USC, but Garrett Nussmeier around like 60-1 could be an interesting Heisman number. But for me, for this week, a game that I kind of do like is South Florida catching all those points against Miami. Ooh. I don't think Miami's played anybody. Florida is atrocious. And then ever since then, they played like Ball State and they played like another Patsy. Like, they really haven't been tested. And South Florida, we know those in-state rivalries. Those kids, I'm sure they wish they played for Miami. It's like one of those one-sided in-state rivalries. Miami doesn't care about South Florida, but I'm sure the South Florida guys are like, get Miami out of here. We want to beat Miami to prove that we're better than them. Like, I think that could be a big kind of motivational spot for the Bulls. They're going to be against a Hurricanes team that everyone's kind of been patting them on the back for the last 2.5-3 weeks about how great they are, and Cam Ward's the Heisman, but it's still a crystal ball team, which would give me pause with laying the points with Miami. So if I can get like 17 or better with South Florida, I think that's the spot to go ahead and back the Bulls, what could be kind of like a flat spot for the Miami Hurricanes and Cam Ward and all those guys.
Bemmy, you're the best, man. Appreciate it. Where can we find your show?
Yeah, you can find us on the BetQL app. We're on YouTube or Twitch. Just search You Better You Bet, also in podcast form as well. The show is Monday through Friday. The Femi and Friends Hour is from 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern time. And then I join Nick Costos from 4 to 7 p.m. Eastern for the rest of the show. So it's a four-hour show, just Femi and Friends the first hour. Then it's me and Nick from 4 to 7. And it's obviously NFL, college football, you name it. We're talking about it. We're betting on it. It's a really fun show, so we encourage everybody to check it out.
Bemmy, appreciate the time, man. Congrats again. It was good to see you, and we'll hopefully do this again soon.
Awesome, man. Be well, and good luck with the bets.
All right. Thank you guys for listening. Thank you to Femi Abebefe. Rate, review, subscribe. Enjoy the weekend. Talk to you Monday.